Attention. The National Weather Service has issued a hurricane warning for the entirety of the National Hockey League. Please stay tuned for further information from the Storm Cellar.
Welcome back to the Storm Cellar. It's a mixed emotions kind of a day. I'm glad the team has some fight. They came back. They got a few points after that long roadie. Obviously, we're going to talk about Antti Raanto being waived and how we got to that point and where we go from here. But I told Ray, I said, today is going to be a day filled with F words, like frustrated. And what was the other ones I used? I had some good old man words there. Flabbergasted, right?
Flummoxed.
Flummoxed, that was the word that I used. Yeah, so this will be, and Ray is finally watching Ted Lasso. So lots of F words today.
Yeah.
Flummoxed, frustrated. He's even dressed like Roy Kent. It's beautiful. How are you, Ray? Are you? I feel like you're in mourning is really what the black is about.
I'm not kidding. It's so strange. Last week when we were on the program, we were 0-4 over the games that, you know, in between, and we were miserable. And somehow in that broadcast, we managed to come up with a really positive kind of feel good. The world is not ending.
Aaron.
Thank you,
Aaron. Because that didn't come from you and I.
it certainly wasn't. And then this time, we've got 5 out of 6 points, right? Like, and goal scoring and things that make you feel great. And then yesterday, we get a, you know, nuclear bomb in my eyes. And now I just feel like Roy Kent, and all I want to do is, like, that's it. And it's so strange. We're going to get to all of that. But thankfully, there is someone here who is going to be able to help us get through it all. And not just get through it all, guide us, help us along with lots of, details. And people know him. This is kind of funny. No one really knew or knows his name, but everyone knows him. Kane Stats is here and is going to bring some sunshine to the Storm Cellar that is richly needed. Kane Stats, thank you so much for joining us. You sat through the preamble before we opened the recording and you stayed. You didn't get scared off. So bravery, you're top shelf. I love that. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I think it's a little bit of a weird morning, obviously, because it's a morning and we're mourning everything with Raanto. Obviously, like, the situation's still kind of growing. We don't know where it's going to head to, but still kind of a weird vibe going into today.
It certainly is. But we know how things run in the Storm Cellar. We don't address the issues immediately because our focus is on the Caniacs and jerks like Brad and I all over the world. No matter where they are, we always want to hear their story. The Caniacs and the jerks, we fuel the fire of this team and make them as great as they are. And Kane Stats, you're right up there. Everyone knows you and you provide so much. So what we want to do is shine the spotlight on you, how you got into hockey. Did it start with the Hurricanes or not? Maybe you migrated to, Raleighwood. And, just give us the lowdown, the details. What makes you love this team so much? So now I'll turn the floor over to you.
So I can kind of give you my story, and I'm pretty sure my story is not like everybody else's because I'm born and raised in South Carolina, just outside of Charleston. So I'm not in the Raleigh area and I've never lived in North Carolina in my life. I got into hockey because of video games, and growing up, I had PlayStation and I had PC, and one Christmas I ended up getting NHL 2000 for Christmas, and I just got really into hockey from that, which led to me ending up getting skates and hockey equipment and playing street hockey in my neighborhood with the kids. So I've been skating my whole life. I learned how to skate when I was 5 and 6. So I was playing hockey in the neighborhood, and through video games, I ended up watching hockey all the time. Because of where I lived, I didn't get local Hurricanes games until way down the line. So it was about, because I'd been watching hockey for 4 or 5 years, and I'm like, the Hurricanes are my team, but I never actually got to watch them. I just collected trading cards and played them on video games and whenever they came on TV. It wasn't until actually after we won the Stanley Cup in 2006 where Charleston ended up getting broadcasting rights to Hurricanes games full time. And we ended up getting like 50 to 60 games a year. And then weirdly enough, I'd say that's when I actually became a fan, because it's like I could actually watch every game after that year. It's just very disappointing. It wasn't a good season the year after the Stanley Cup. But, you know, it was like part of being the fandom, right? Like you take the good and bad. So I look at it as like, cool, we won the Stanley Cup, but I didn't really get to experience all that joy all at once because I didn't get to watch the journey along the way. But now it's like I actually get to experience the journey of being a fan since I can watch every single game here.
NHL 2000. Yes. You know, I love the video games, Brad, but I go back a little bit further. I'm back to the Sega and playing the Hartford squad on the NHL games with Sega. And as broken as that was, I mean, it was fun and you could
check. NHL 94 is still the best hockey game of all time, in my opinion.
It's just so much fun. It's so much fun, right? And that's amazing that it actually comes from there. So that, you know, there's a unique connection. The people that love hockey, if you are a gamer, you've got the games, you've got them, and every year you don't miss out because you want to see who the new, I mean, it's a thing to have players asked if they think that their game rating is the way that they are, if it's fair. Like, that's just amazing how gaming is so tight for that.
I'm not sure if you saw the Seth Jarvis interview about that. I don't know if you were going off of that, where they asked if they thought his rating was too low or too high on the lie detector test.
Yeah, I did see that, but it happens with a lot of, I mean, there was, I heard someone talking about it on the NHL network in SiriusXM. They just will stop for a few minutes and start talking about the games themselves. It's crazy.
Yeah. And like growing up with the video games my whole life, like it's weird how that transitioned into like a complete fandom for the Hurricanes, because at one point, a couple of years, like it was just me experiencing the Hurricanes through video games. And then I only picked them because it was the closest thing to a local team. And then it ended up being like, oh, now I can actually go and see games and travel up to North Carolina with family and friends and go and actually experience hockey. I should also say, like, part of that, like I living here, we do have an ECHL team, the South Carolina Stingrays. So I did get to see a lot of ECHL games along the way going there, but it's a completely like different atmosphere going to ECHL and then experiencing NHL, because ECHL, like we all know, it's like a jungle down there. Like it's just people trying to scratch and claw and make their way and just fight their way all the way up into like the higher ranks. So it's like, back when I was watching the ECHL, there's like so many fights every single game.
Very Lord of the Flies, right?
Yeah. Yes. Good call.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it still is kind of in its own way.
It's a way more physical game. It's kind of funny, right? Like the ECHL and stuff, it's just a different style of game. You get to the NHL, the very first thing that I experienced when I was in the barn, Northlands Coliseum in Edmonton, my very first game, I think it was, if I recall correctly, it was Edmonton and the Washington Capitals. And I'm not a fan of either team, but got to go. And one of the thing that jumped out at me the most being in the barn is how fast it is. Even way, way back in the day, guys like Peter Bondra just blew my mind. Like they were so fast. And I think, you know, when you compare, it's such a scrappier fighting skill or whatever until you get to the NHL. And that's where the guys who can be physical actually highlight themselves as actually super quick and ultra talented. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the one moment I have that stood out to where I realized ECHL to NHL was I sat during a warm-up in 2007 for a Capitals game and hearing Ovechkin take warm-ups and just like hearing one of his shots miss the net and hit the glass, and it just echoes throughout the arena because it's like so powerful and so loud. I was like, wow, that's an NHL shot right there.
It is. And, you know, maybe, okay, so this is going to be sounding a little bit conspiracy theorist, but I think some of those guys do that with a really, really heavy shot. They do that almost for intimidation. You know what I mean? Like in those warm-ups fans and stuff. It's crazy. Now, I've got to credit you, Kane Stats, because you jumped on board, like not jumped on board, you were with them before, but after the Stanley Cup victory, we went almost immediately into dark times. Like really at 2000, after 2009, we made it to that Eastern Conference final, but after that it was just, and you stayed with it the whole time. Give me your take on those dark years.
It's kind of a blur now. It's funny thinking back, like I was talking to a friend, Heather, and we're looking through, there's like a, this person played for these teams, and it happened to be a player from like 2012, 2013. And I'm like, I can't even remember the roster for that year because it's like such a blur of how many, I don't want to insult the players. Let's find a better word than bad. how many non-NHL level players we had playing for our teams during those times. And like, I look back and like Jamie McBain was an all-star for us. And then he was out of the league, like less than a year later almost.
Yeah.
And I think something that kept me in it, obviously, was I was writing for Bleacher Report for a very, very brief period of time for 2 years. So it happened to be 2010 to 2012. And it's like, oh, I have to create some content and, you know, let's talk prospects. Oh, Zach Boychuk, he might be the next big thing for the Hurricanes. Or Drayson Bowman, like he had a great year. Zach Dalpy was great at Ohio State. It's like all these things like, oh, we have bright spots. But then you realize, oh, this isn't really going the way we think it's going to go. And even like going back to like signing like Alex Semin and the one great season he really had where he helped Erie Tolusti be in the top five in scoring for the Hurricanes. And then it's like, how in the world did that happen?
Oh, it's so, you know what? It's so funny. And this is going to be bizarre. I have a Zach Boychuk signed hockey card.
I'm sorry.
I know.
I had to block him on social media because it's all Bitcoin.
He blocked me. Geez. He blocked me a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Oh, it's funny though. I tell my son all the time. It's like, you know, a lot of the words we use, like bright spots, like that's relative, right? And so at the time, it was a bright spot, and now you look back and you're like, ooh, man, things were much darker than I remember. But
I think one thing I took from it really is, and it sounds so cliche and dumb, but enjoy it while you have it. Like there's certain times like we come back and we have like a really good game where it's just like you see the team pumped up, like Kuchekov's like a penalty shot save and him getting into it with Kachuk. Like just enjoy these moments, like because you never know when like something's going to happen or the team, like even if a player gets injured and doesn't play again, like just enjoy it while you have it and just like take the good and just like throw away the bad because the bad's going to happen, but there's no reason to just like sit and let it fester. Like just enjoy enjoy this team while you have the moment to just experience the experience us being good.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. That's one reason I'm always like, get it out during the game. Like, vent your frustration, say all the things that are emotional that you know aren't really true. Get it out. Cause then you get it out, right? And then the next day you're like, okay, we're good. Hype train on to day two, right? Or on to the next game, which is wonderful. What I was thinking, Ray, was with people like Kane Stats, how many Kaniacs have come on our show and basically been like, oh yeah, I started following you in, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009. And it's amazing to me how many people started when it was kind of the beginning of those dark years and have persevered and stuck with the team. And I mean, you won't find a more committed fan base in sports to me, right? Because I mean, literally half of our guests probably started like after the 2006 run, right? And a lot of them before Rod took over during those times. Some of them had 2 years of bad time. Some of them had eight or nine or more. But repeatedly we hear, you know, they weren't good, but I still fell in love, right? It's, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants, I guess. And I think it's a testament to the Kaniacs and what we're doing. Because, you know, Ray, like you, is, you know, not Raleigh born and raised. He happened to be a Whalers guy because that's right who, you know, he kind of clung to. Like, they were kind of the misfits, right? The oddballs. And I don't know. I just think it's a cool thing. It's not like, you know, you meet a Habs fan, you meet a Rangers fan, and it's like, oh yeah, like I love them. It's great. It's like, yeah, because they've always been good for the most part. Like, and even their bad seasons aren't that bad, right? Yeah, it's generational, you know, especially the original six guys are yeah. Oh, that's my team. It's like, you know, my dad and my grandpa cheered for them and all. But with a young team, you know, we're now starting to see second generation and maybe starting to see the third ones being born. So we're just starting to get that. So all the people that have been there, it's because of their own love, right? It's not like this is something like I did necessarily with mom and dad, but it's like, oh no, I fell in love with them. And we're starting to get a few who are like, oh yeah, you know, we've had a few people on, like, you know, I went to hockey games with my folks and blah, blah, blah. But that's a relatively new thing for the Canes. I mean, that's only been in the last, you know, this last generation. So I don't know. I just think that's a really cool thing to point out.
It is very cool. And so Kane Stats will wrap it up, which I always want to know, is there a player that resonates with you? Who's your guy all time and on this squad, if they're different, because it's totally legit that one of this year's players is your guy of all time.
Guessing it's not Zach Boychuk.
Probably. No, he's pretty far down on the list. I always go to Eric Staal. I think watching him play, like, it's just different. Like, watching how good he was. Like, we obviously had players like Rod Brind'Amour, Corey Stillman, but watching how good he was at such a young age and how he had to carry some really, 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 really bad teams for years, I think he doesn't get the recognition that he should have from the fan base, because once he was traded, he ended up going off on Minnesota. Players currently, I try not to keep favorite players. Obviously, there's players I like more than others, but I try to keep my opinions a little bit biased towards them. I think it's hard to hate a player like Andrei Svechnikov, though. Like, he's just so likable in the organization, and you just want to root for a kid like that who was drafted for us. I don't want to say he helped our franchise a lot, but like, getting that draft pick was such a huge moment for the entire city of Raleigh. Like, I think he helped carry us to the playoffs and kind of helped us keep us there. So even seeing him hurt, like, you can tell like how like it affects the morale of the team, just because they root for a kid like that. So it's hard to hate a player like that. And I think he's probably like the lifeblood of the franchise currently.
When are the Jets back in Raleigh? That's my question, because I need someone to settle someone's hash.
You know what? Right. I mean, that's a whole rant I could have, but player safety, what is the point? Like, if players, they say they want to stop cross checks. That was a whole ordeal last year. A player gets injured off of a cross check. It's a 2-minute penalty, no fine. And we have a player out probably, I mean, I'm just speculating. Let's just say 3 weeks to a month. 3 weeks to a month because of an injury for a penalty, and there's no repercussions for it. It's absurd.
You know, yeah. I was gonna drop a question about this on this entirety later on the program. Do we want to talk it now, or Brad? I cut you off, Brad. You go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, I think it was The Athletic that had an article yesterday, day before, about in the last week we've seen three different boarding, basically. One no call ended up with a fine. One ended up with, I think, a 1-game suspension, and one ended up, the cross check in Detroit ended up with, like, I forgot how many games that was. But yeah, so three very similar plays in terms of like level of violence, potential for injury, and three completely different outcomes in terms of player safety. It's, you know, they talk a big game, and people, you know, what's weird to me is, even as fans, I see fans going, we need player safety to get serious. We need to do something. And then the league hands down like 3 or 4 games, and everybody's like, oh, that's too much. Too much. Like, no, it's not. That should be the new norm. It's only too much compared to how weakly they've penalized in the past. Like, let's set a new floor. You know, if you cross check, you know, a guy like Svechnikov and he's out for a month, you don't penalize it based upon the injury. You penalize it based upon the potential for for injury. And that should have been a couple of games. Like, some of the ones we see, like the cross checks and everything, like in the Detroit game, like, yeah, like those guys should sit for a couple of weeks. Like, if you wanted out Jacob Trouba, like, we could do shows upon him. You know, if he was sitting a week or two at a time for those hits to the head, he would stop. I mean, it's not, you know, even he's that smart. I mean, you know, but the league, you know, it's, I don't want to get conspiratorial about big teams versus small market teams, but look at the teams that get, whose guys get penalized for that stuff. And look at the teams whose guys skate on that stuff. And it trends toward the big market. You're not going to suspend a guy from, you're not going to suspend New York Rangers captain for 4 or 5 games. You're just not going to do it. The league doesn't have the guts.
I like to go back to the Tom Wilson New York Rangers incident, where Tom Wilson went full idiot and didn't get a single, I don't even think he got fined from that, if I remember right. It comes down to George Parros is incapable of doing his job, like, plain and simple. He has the confidence from Gary Bettman. Gary Bettman just doesn't counter anything he does. Once it goes to an appeal, he's like, nope, Parros is right, even though he has zero confidence from anybody in the league. The Rangers get fined for issuing a statement about said incident. You have players like Mike Hoffman, who get busted in the chops last year with a cross check to the face, and the player has no repercussions, even though we have cross checks to the face now that have repercussions. There's no consistency with the ruling. And then you have player agents like Alan Walsh calling out the inconsistencies of, why is David Perrin getting a 6-game suspension, even though these three similar plays had 1-game suspensions? There's no consistency with, like, player safety. It's a spin of the wheel. And then George Parros is a monkey and then just pretends he knows what he's doing. And he's like, you know what? Maybe this will be a suspension. Maybe it'll be a fine. I don't care. There's no consistency with it. And he's incapable of doing his job and should be fired immediately.
Jacob Trouba, 2-hand swings at, I forgot who it was, like 2 weeks Frederick, thank you. From one angle, it doesn't quote unquote look as bad. That's true. Who cares? Well, once again, it should be the intent. The fact that he took 2 hands and swung his stick at his head, that should be like, okay, like, that's 5 games.
It shouldn't even
be a question. The one that sticks out to me,
though, that's insane. Right.
The one that sticks out to me is, there's a great clip on YouTube of Sidney Crosby getting mad, and he literally takes a guy up 2 hands and basically, like, just chucks him into the boards. Like, after the play, right? The play's gone. The puck is away. The referee watches Sidney pick a guy up and slam him into the boards, skates off. They just like just pretending it like Sidney Crosby can literally pick you up and body slam you. It's not going to be called because it's Sidney Crosby. It's amazing.
Yeah, you know what? Kane stats fired up like Roy Kent. I love it. And it's hard to argue with them. There is no arguing with you. That's exactly the way it's been. It's confusing. It's, and it, more importantly, there is no player safety in it at all. They call it player safety, but that's befuddling and flummoxing and flabbergasting and discombobulating all in one. How do you like that? Throw them all in there.
And I was going to say my last point, clearly it's a NHL issue, but it's also an NHLPA issue where they need to decide, hey, are these fines sufficient enough to assist with player safety? Because we know deep down the players, the NHLPA, they want to keep fines at a minimum and they want it to protect the players from these types of things. But they need to decide, hey, are head injuries worth the suspensions or not? Like, are we going to increase player safety or are we going to continue to let the NHL hand down lengthy suspensions or just keep doing $5,000 fines for stuff that clearly needs to be a suspendable offense?
Somebody's going to have to get really hurt first.
You know what? Yeah. And that's what's going to happen. That spinning of the wheel and stuff, it's going to come up, you know, double stars on someone and they're going to be out for the rest of their lives. And I think like of guys like Steve Moore way, way back in the day, right? Where that something like that size is going to have to happen again before anyone pays attention. And it's
right.
Nuts. And $5,000 is a cappuccino fine.
And one last thing on it. The players, and you've already started to see the Perron incident, the players are going to start policing themselves if the league's not going to do it. Like, the league has worked hard to get that out of hockey. Like, we don't want to go back to like slap shot-esque hockey. But if guys are allowed to take cheap shots, the players are going to start taking it upon themselves to police that vigilante style. And that's going to be bad for everybody. I mean,
and Frederick squared up with Trouba last night, as a matter of fact. Like, the very first opportunity they got onto the ice at the same time, they decided to chuck knuckles. Frederick kind of won. It was super fast. He landed one punch and then, you know, it was kind of fell to the ice. As a rating for a fight, it wasn't much, but he might have felt like he got his pound of flesh. You know what I mean? For what happened. Still not enough for Trouba in my estimation. Like,
but even then, last Sunday, Gudbranson had to take things into his own hands because he felt the league couldn't police a boarding penalty that was clearly should have been an ejection or 5 minutes. It was egregious, and it's insane. Like that got called 2 minutes.
Ugh, I don't even know. Okay, you know what? We've kind of secretly merged from, you know, Kane stats featured to the state of the league. And so that's just fine. It's the way these kind of conversations go. And I love the way that sort of happens. Let's go from state of the NHL safety to the biggest news dropped on us. Antti Raanta, Father Finn, on waivers currently. He has another 3 hours to wait, I believe, because it is 12 noon Mountain Standard Time after. So he's got 24 hours. And as I've read it, usually they do it in such a way where it's noon from Mountain Standard Time the day he's dropped on until the next day. That's the 24-hour window. No word yet on whether someone picked him up. I'm going to ask you guys right now. A, before we get into how we feel about it, does another team pick him up? Yes or no? And why?
I'll go first if you want.
If you like, yeah.
Based off of how he's playing, I don't think he gets claimed currently. I could see a team wanting to take a chance with him at $1.5 million, but as they say at the trade deadline for a team, like if they want to take a chance on him, cap is the biggest tool. I don't see any team that's fighting for a playoff spot willing to take a chance on Ronta while he's in the form he's currently playing in.
Brad, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's perfect. If it was, well, he wouldn't be on waivers if it was the Ronta that we've gotten to know, you know, and that Ronta would have been snatched up in the first 5 minutes, right? Like somebody would have been on the phone immediately. But with what's going on now and the why is this happening to him, I don't see anybody taking that chance, which is, you know, the last thing in the world. I expected there to be some kind of trade. I feel like, you know, Don had to do something in goal. Waving a goalie with no goalie in reserve and somebody who has been as good for you as Ronta's been is, you know, did not see that coming.
And I'll make it 3 for 3. I don't believe that he'll be picked. And again, it has more to do with the struggles he's having right now than anything. And now I'm going to, I guess, make my statement / mini rant. Brad texted me that Ronta was put on waivers. He says, I think the text exactly was, Rantos is on waivers in case you didn't know. And I stopped everything. I stopped everything I was doing. And I was like, what? That can't be right. That can't be right. And then I saw the news story on it. And then I got really, really, really angry. And I still am. I'm not angry at Ronta. I know what he can do. He's shown it to us before. And yes, he's struggling. No, he's not playing the way he has played with us in the past that got us to love him and call him Father Finn, right? Not even angry at the front office. This is business, right? And sometimes you got to do this sort of thing, and it's just business, and they're doing what they deem that they need to do. I'm not mad at them either. Who I'm really angry at is every friggin' skater on this squad. I have grown so tired of not seeing that consistent effort and seeing how many times players like Natchez, like Stahl, like D'Angelo, like Burns, I could name them all, where they completely ignore their defensive responsibilities. How many times have we shouted, close the back
door? Fabulous back door.
We almost needed the horn there for me.
Almost.
It makes me nuts. These guys didn't, in all of the time that Rod has taken the wheel, they've not played like this. He brought a new style to them, relentless forecheck, always, you know, defensive responsibilities. When they gapped like that and it was a bad play, they were like, they happened so rarely, it was easy to give them a pass. Easy to give them a pass. Now we're watching games where we're cheering the actual defensive responsibility that they were doing every day as part of their thing. Now it happens so few times where we see a magnificent effort. Suddenly, you know, guys like me and Brad and everyone are saying, wow, look at that. What a great effort by Seth Jarvis, who is skating back full tilt, diving to make a stop and slamming himself. That is awesome. That was standard. That was standard for us. And when you hang Ront out to dry, Friday night's game, first goal. Not 10 seconds before the first goal was allowed, a little bit soft, Ronta made an unbelievable first stop, kicked a leg out, and kicked out a big juicy rebound. Wouldn't you know it? On the other end is Predators. I can't remember if it was Forsberg or not. I think it was Forsberg, who was on the end of the rebound, and he hammered it. And Ronta was there to make that save too. First of all, Forsberg should have been covered. He shouldn't have been open like that to begin with. Ronta makes the saves, and you're going to give up rebounds. It happens. You can't, absorb them all. But when you kick out the rebound, you got to know your defenders are going to be there to take care of any secondary opportunities. You get one shot, right? There's 2-3 shots, odd-manned rushes all the time. And we're expecting our goaltenders to clean up the mess all the time. And that's what they're paid to do, right? So me being angry because goaltenders are expected to clean up the messes that are in front of them, I mean, that would, if I actually believe that and was mad, it would insinuate that I know nothing about hockey. That is what goaltenders do. They clean up the messes in front of them. But you cannot willfully leave them and hang them out to dry. Natchez, I'm talking to you. Your pirouettes and your overtime goals and your speed and everything, that is all great. Your back passes to no one, your turnovers that turn around and go back the other way in an odd man advantage, that's why Ronta is on waivers. Clean it up. Urgh. Sorry. I don't think that would matter.
Yeah. And I know it's not just Natchez, right? I'm not going to name this player's name. The other night, I saw a player cower from a slap shot from the point, like literally moved his body out of the way like he didn't want to get hit. And I'm like,
what are you doing?
Block what are you shot. Doing? Get in front of the flipping shot, man. Like, you're a defender. Defend. But so many times this season have Ray and I both been like, they didn't close the back door. And, 2 seconds later, the puck's in the net. I mean, Rod's style of hockey only works when there is an equal commitment to defense as to the offense, right? It's a motion offense hockey, which just means everybody moves forward. Positions are kind of, Your position really is only dictates where you started a faceoff. After that, you go where you're needed, right? So defenders pinch and forwards stay back and all those kind of things. And it only works if you do that on both ends of the ice. So I'm with you. We were talking a little bit before, and I said the other night, there's a lot of blame to go around. Ronta's not been good this year. Part of Ronta not being good, and Kane's stats, I think, was agreeing with us before, a lot of it, I think, is in his head, right? So Brent Burns is slower this year than last year because he's old. It just is. And he's still logging like 20-plus minutes a night, right? Bodies break down. They're going to get slower no matter how good a shape you're in. It's why guys, the age of Ray and I don't play hockey unless their name is Jagr. Goaltenders are a little different, right? So is Ronta as fast on the skates as he used to be? Probably not, but like he's not losing like that hand-eye coordination. I mean, you can see he's still got those things. So I don't think that this drop-off year over year is a body breaking down. He's too old for the position. Although you don't see many goaltenders his, he's 34, I think. And there's only a handful of goaltenders in the league that are that old. I mean, you can count them on two hands for sure, maybe on one. And, it's once things aren't going well to start the season, goaltenders tend to blame themselves, even if it's not their fault, right? It's just kind of built into who they are a little bit. It's just one of those quirky things. And that messes with your head. And then you actually do some things that are your fault. And then you really know those are your fault and you really take those hard. And then the team doesn't give you any goal support and you keep the other team to three goals or to two goals and you still lose because your team can't put the puck and you take that because that's an L on your record, right? And it snowballs. And I think that's what's happened here. I'm not saying Ronta is blameless. Ronta has 100% let in some soft goals that you just can't let in if you want to win a championship or even make the playoffs at this point. But when your defense is only, I think it was RB Kaniak who was posting the heat maps of the shots that are going in, and they're all right in the, right in the slot. I mean, they're all grade A chances like that they're giving up. And the problem with that is what the heat map doesn't show you is things like the defensive lapses, where not only was the person in the great position, it was just him and Ronta. And you want your goalie to make those saves, right? You want your goalie to be that last line of defense, but they're not going to get them all. And when your offense isn't scoring, you only have to give up like one of those a game to lose. It doesn't take much, right? You know, the Preds game was very different, right? High scoring game, but they had two goal leads. And I put some of the blame on Ronta. I'm like, was the OT goal on him? No. You know, you had two of your slowest players on the ice, which I get because you want to go out there, win the faceoff, take control of the puck. So you put Staal in there. You put Burns in because he's one of your best defenders. But those are also two of your slowest players. So as soon as they lost that draw, I texted Ray, and I was like, this is over. Like done. Like I think my exact words were, you cannot let the Preds have the puck in overtime is what I said. You know, you're on the second half of a back-to-back. You're tired. You could see the guys were gassed. And I said, if the Preds get the puck, this is over. And that's unfortunately exactly what happened. That one wasn't on Ronta. Like a couple of the ones earlier in the game, yeah, those were on Ronta. Like it should have never gone to overtime, you know? But it's a combination. It's not just Ronta. Before we let Kane's stats have a turn, I'm stepping on his toes maybe a little bit. I looked up a few Ronta stats just to put things into perspective, right? So Ronta has been underrated. I mean, he's a fan favorite, so from that aspect, I'm not worried. I think people love him to death. I can't think of anybody who doesn't like him as a person. But he's been really good for you as a goalie. Overall, he has an 801 win percentage as a Hurricane with a 911 save percentage. If your goalie's winning 4 out of 5 games for you, career.
Thank you.
What's there to complain about?
Yeah, not much.
But then you look at his home record. At home in Raleigh, a 913 win percentage.
There was a point where he was like, holy smokes, undefeated.
Yeah, last year he only lost 2 games at home.
That's crazy.
And that's with Anderson out, a chunk and everything. And a 920 save percentage. He has been so good for you that what we're seeing now is maybe that's part of the frustration is because much like with the frustration with the team, you're like, I know how much better he is than what we're seeing. What's wrong, right? You know, it's a lot of us, especially like with a family member, like you have a loved one, like you don't know what's wrong with them. You know they're hurting, something's going on, but you don't know what it is. Like that's scary, right? That scare, that fear turns into anger and kind of, you start getting snappy with people. And I feel like that's true for what's happened to Ronta this year as much as the team is because we know how good he can be. You don't have a 913 win percentage at home for a season and not be really darn good. And some of that's bolstered by having a team in front of you that's playing good defense. And this year, it's both, right? Ronta's not playing as well as he has been. The team is not playing as well in front of him, and the goalies are being hung out to dry. Because ultimately, when you look at the goalie stats, like what's the main stat for goalie? Win-loss record, right? Save percentage. I mean, you either have the games where the goalie's only seeing 10 shots a game, and they're not ever in the flow, and it's almost like going out there cold, right? When you sit out there and scratch your bum with your stick for 15 out of 20 minutes in a period, It's hard to then face down a breakaway or a 2-on-1. I mean, you know, I'm sure anybody who plays like beer league hockey is like, oh yeah, like I wouldn't want to do that either. You know, so now the shot totals have come down some for the Canes. It's a little more even, a little more back and forth, and they're playing better. They're playing more Hurricanes hockey, but it's not translating as well on the defensive side. Like they've got to stop letting in those really high grade chances from the slot. And, you know, things like the turnovers, the blue line that go back the other way for odd man rushes. I mean, that's been a problem throughout Rod Brind'Amour's tenure. It's just the style of hockey. I don't know that they can fix that other than before, you know, hockey's a fast game. It's not like you have a ton of time to think. You kind of have to act on instinct. But some of the passes make me question if guys are seeing what's out there. I mean, some of them are just straight to the opposition and then coming back the other way. And if you can cut out those, goaltending will be better because there'll be fewer odd man rushes. Team defense will get better because you'll have guys who are set and able to get back and make plays. And I don't know. I'm upset with the whole situation. I feel awful for Ranta. I think he has been a fantastic Hurricane. I tweeted, you know, hey, what about Coach Ranta? Like, what's, you know, like, hear me out, Coach Ranta, right?
Yeah.
I can't imagine Ranta as a dad going to the AHL at any point and riding a bus at this point in his career. I think he would rather hang him up. And if he were to decide that for whatever reason, I would love to see him stay on and work with the guys. You can call him a morale coach. I mean, for all I care, I mean, he doesn't even have to be the goaltending coach, but he seems like the kind of guy that you can build around in a locker room. Like, just having him there physically makes the team better, I think. So that's my mini rant.
Kane stats. We need you to talk us off the ledge. Clearly, clearly here in the cellar, Brad and I are on the ledge waiting to jump. I don't know if you're capable of talking us back, but let us, you know,
it's a low ledge.
What's exactly?
It's not like it was like 3 weeks ago.
Exactly. True enough.
I think whenever you're talking about like morale coach, like that kind of got me a little bit just because, you know, how respected he is in the locker room. They call him Father Finn for a reason. He spends his holidays with all the Finns, like Gakaniemi, Aho, Turbo. They all spend time together as the Finns on the team. And, you know, like that's an instant morale hit to those guys just because they know how much Ranta means to them. Even just being the like Finnish presence in the locker room, like that's a big deal to those guys because that's another countryman that they can talk to with for advice and other things like that. Keeping it simple, going back to hockey, like the old saying, a good defense starts with a good offense or vice versa. When you have an offense that their whole mindset, whenever you start, is getting pucks deep, working, winning puck battles, keeping the puck low, and then getting the pucks to the point. When you have players like Burns who are having an off year, whether it's old age, an injury, something, because I know he might have been dinged up earlier this year. I don't know how serious it is or if it's still a factor, but when he leads the league in shots that are blocked by such a hefty margin, I don't know if it's 20 or 30 shots at this point, which is just an insane number. Him and Slavin's whole shtick from last year is just a little bit off because they're playing more in their defensive zone than they were last year. Like, they were so good last year because they spent their entire time in the offensive zone. The stall line, they're spending so much time in the offensive zone. But how many offensive chances are they getting? Like, slim to none. They're not – I know they're your defensive – I'm using that with quotes, air quotes. I know they're your defensive set of forwards, but part of what made them effective a couple years ago was Nino Niederreiter getting shots on. They were scoring goals. Jesper Fast was winning all the puck battles and getting the pucks to Stahl from the net. Stahl was scoring goals with Martinuk. They're not scoring goals this year. I posted a stat about Jordan Stahl's numbers at 5v5 this year, and I think – I don't know if it's correct anymore, but I think he's been on the ice for 7 goals scored for us this year at 5v5 and something around 18 or 19 against. And that's just a number you're not expecting from your top defensive forwards. I know Aho got a lot of slack because he went on a pointless streak for a little bit. I'm not sold on him and Jarvis and whoever is the third wheel on the top line. Like, I feel like they've been good, but they've not had the chemistry needed for Aho. I think personally Aho works best with Turbo. I think they just have instant chemistry and they have not thrown them together. I'm just speculating here, but I'm thinking they keep Teravainen away from Aho because Teravainen is good defensively, which helps out whenever he's paired with Natchez or Kotkaniemi. Those two have struggled getting to work, I would say, getting pucks deep, winning puck battles, and doing what we do best, like getting the pucks and working. There's so many times this year where, whether it's on the defensive side of the puck or the offensive side of the puck, where it's just an instant turnover for no reason. Like, Teravainen had a really bad pizza up the middle the other night, and it was uncharacteristic for him, but he tossed the puck up and he just didn't clear the zone. Nate just cleared the zone, brought the puck back into the zone the other night, and then turned it over, which was awful. And when you have those kinds of defensive lapses against, that's why our goalies are struggling. Like, when you're allowing the most highest quality grade A chances against your goaltenders, they're going to allow goals. It's just plain and simple. Goalies in the NHL save roughly, I'm just guessing, like 81 to 82% of grade A chances. You look at Ronta's save percentage and it's 85.8 or something like that. It's the reason it's so low for all of our goaltenders right now is because we're giving up high quality chances for no reason. It comes back to playing your man, playing defense, and getting to work. And plain and simple, we are not getting it done defensively. And half of that starts because we're not getting it done offensively. We're not getting onto our forecheck. We're not getting the pucks deep. We're not creating offensive chances. The bright spot to that is, I think, players like Stefan Nason, who have bought in. He's not the best defensively, but he works. He works hard to get on the defensive side of the puck. He knows to get the puck deep, and he works from behind the net. The reason being is because that's where we are best, is getting the pucks deep, working behind the net. Same with a player like Svechnikov. Yes, he's not scoring goals, or he wasn't scoring goals, but where does he get the puck? He gets the puck deep and works behind the net. Like, that's where we need our pucks to be. That's where we're best, and we're just not doing that right now. Yes, I think some of the blame does go to goaltending. Like, you need your goaltenders to get a save. Kochetkov had a little bit of a slower start. Last two games, he made those saves that we needed, including the penalty shot. And that's where the team gets boosted. They're like, oh, yes, we're getting it going now. Like, our goalie's making saves. And you can kind of tell offensively they were feeling it. Like, hey, PK's making those saves. Like, we can work our forecheck and try to take a little bit more risks offensively because, like, we're getting those saves. I don't think Ronta's had one of those games this year where he's kind of stolen the game. Ronta, to me, is like an above-average goaltender. He's going to make the saves that are not risky, and you can't give up grade A's with him. Like, he's a good goalie, but he's not a great goalie. Like, he's going to buy you the saves that you need from him. He can make the timely saves, but you shouldn't be asking him to make 3 to 4 to 5 grade A saves every single game. It's just not a winning formula. You go back to Ronta also, and I'll make 2 points on this. I've seen the Scott Darling comparison, and it just me off. Like, Scott Darling was, he had his own stuff that he was going through, and he just was not a good goaltender at all with us. Like, there was never a period of time where Scott Darling was great. I would say he might have been good, but mostly below average the whole time. Ronta, literally 2 years ago in the playoffs, carried us. He was such a good goalie at home for the Hurricanes in the last 2 years. He was 8-2 with a save percentage of 941 in 10 starts in Raleigh. 941. And you listen to that number, and it's just absurd of how good he was at home during the playoffs. I think it's very disappointing of how his tenure is going to end up, but I think it's, I don't want to say it's good, but it's good that Waddell realizes it might be time to press the escape button and make a move. Waddell's never been one to shy away from what he thinks is a good business move, whether the fans think it's a good move or not. I look at moves like Nino Niederreiter, where he wanted a lot of money and he was a fan favorite, but he couldn't pay the money and he wasn't willing to, and he moved on. I think he's never been one to shy away from a move that might be controversial and not liked, but I'm kind of curious to see where this goes, because if he clears waivers, it's not a move that's going to instantly fix any issues. It's not going to be a move that even like factors in immediately, because I mean, getting a goalie for a trade's not something that happens within a day. Like, this could be a January issue. It could be something that's around New Year's, but it's kind of curious to see where this is going to go from here.
A lot of good points. So many good points. One of which is actually, I have to, this is not a walk back. It's just an adjustment to my previous statement. I said every single skater I was holding accountable for it. And Kane Stats reminded me that Nason has been great and has nothing to do.
He's been your best player.
So Nason, I'm removing you from that criticism. Okay. I'm removing you from that criticism, but I'm holding everyone else accountable. Okay. And Kane Stats, do you play D&D? Do you like D&D? Have you ever done it?
I have never done that. No.
Okay. So, but Brad has. And so there's a saying that I want to maybe make a comparison to the style of play that we have. Brad, you've heard the phrase, and I know guys like Zach, the Surgecast, he loves D&D. Save suck. You know what that is, right? Mm-hmm. It's a spell that is used where it's going to be absolutely amazing, right? Or it's a roll, rather, where you make a save against something happen to you, or you're almost dead, like, or you become absolutely useless. And I'm wondering whether Rod Brind'Amour's style of play is save suck. When you're doing it right, it's amazing. When you're doing it wrong, you get 6, 7, 8, 10 grade A chances, like Kane Stats was talking about, right in the slot, right? Am I just making that up because of my love of D&D, or?
I think you're right. It's a style of play where either everybody buys in and is doing it right, or if there is a weak link, that weak link is, you know, it's like a really tightly stretched chain, maybe. You know what I mean? Yeah. Where you know, if anything snaps, the links are too far apart, and right now, you know, you're no longer a chain, you're a sieve, right?
Yeah.
To Kane Stats' point, want to take a guess on worst plus minus on the team? I know some people hate that stat, but I'm going to bring it up anyway.
It's a legit stat. I don't know why people hate it.
I think it's a legit stat when it's really good or really bad as compared to, for example, the rest of your team. Like, you know, if you're the high point on the graph, that's probably not good.
Yeah.
You want to know who the high point is on our graph?
For the biggest minus on the team, I'm looking at Natchez, but I could be wrong.
Kane Stats shaking his head like, I'm not guessing. Natchez is second. Jordan Staal, your preeminent defensive forward, the guy you rely on to shut down the other team's forwards, is a minus 12. Natchez and D'Angelo are at minus 10. And the main reason I bring that up is normally Jordan's plus minus is much better because although his line doesn't score a ton of goals, the opposition's forwards don't score against him. No. And they're scoring against him this year. That's the big thing, right? That worries me more than his line not scoring. Now, Marnook finally got his first of the year. You know, that means everybody except for Callahan Burke has at least one goal. Jasper Fast has two. You know, Jordan has four. So you got seven goals from that line a third of the way through the season. But they're a combined like minus 20. And that's a little bit of that's to be expected, right? Like I would assume their plus minus will be a little worse because they're typically taking on the other team's top line. But usually it's not really any worse. It's pretty much in line with the rest of the team because they're just so darn good at it. And this year they've kind of regressed on both sides of the puck, right?
Yeah.
And that's the main reason I bring it up is because, you know, it's glaring to me that your best offensive forward is at 5v5, you know, showing some holes. I mean, you know, minus 12 doesn't make him the worst defender, but it does look, you know, if you compare him to previous seasons, like that's kind of telling. Is that age? Is that the system? I think it's a little bit of everything. Because a couple years ago, we felt like we had one of the youngest teams in the league. And now I feel like, not that we have one of the oldest teams in the league, but I feel like we've gotten older faster than the years have gone by. You know, we've had two or three years go by, but the team average age has gone up 5, 6, 7 years because of guys like, you know, Bernsey being brought in. And with the necessity to play a full 60 of hard, intensive, you know, forechecking, man-to-man D, grinding, hitting, winning puck battles, that's going to take a lot out of those older guys. And I'm just wondering if we're starting to see some of those cracks, you know, where it's just gotten harder for those guys. I mean,
I think something else that's kind of, sorry.
Go ahead.
I think something else that's kind of glaring is a team save percentage when they're on the ice, because I'm not going to get the numbers right, but I know out of every single player in the NHL right now, in all scenarios, the player that's in last place in save percentage while they're on the ice is Jordan Martinook in all situations. And I think it's like 830 while he's on the ice. And how much of that is defensively and how much of that is just bad luck? Because it just seems so hard for a goalie to have that kind of save percentage while you're on the ice. And Jordan Staal at 5v5, I think, was in last place in the NHL around the 850s mark. So it's kind of like, I feel like it's a little bit of bad luck for their line, but also it's like they're not getting the job done on either side of the ice either.
You know, yeah, it's. Wow. I feel like there's a million. You know, we look at things from all these angles, and it feels like there's a million things that could be the issue. And the reality is that it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, as Grandpa Simpson would say. I don't know. It's, you know, I think things that I think you can say factually. One is it's not just the goaltending, right? Two is it's at least partially the goaltending. Three, and this is a big one for me, is, and I noticed it during the Preds game, and where they went on to score, what, five goals? I've said a few times, the Canes aren't hitting. A couple weeks ago, I said the Canes aren't hitting anybody. Like, part of forechecking is going in the corners, putting a body on somebody, and taking the puck. And they just weren't doing that. It didn't feel like it. I mean, if you looked at the hit stats, I feel like they were pretty low. And now, with the last couple of games, and they're playing better, guess what? The first thing I noticed was they're putting bodies on guys, right? They're reminding guys, like, you know, we're not just going to let you skate through and go behind our goal with the puck, or we're not going to let you go behind your own goal and retrieve it and not put a body on you. Seth Jarvis was a great example of that. He's one of the guys I noticed doing that. Part of the reason Stefan Nason has been so good, and he's been like the one consistent guy, I feel like, all year, who has gone in there and put his body in harm's way, right, to make those plays. And he's rubbed guys out. Like, you know, when somebody comes around, he's a big boy, and, you know, he's getting in there and digging. So I think personally, a lot of this starts with the commitment to hitting and forechecking. And the Canes are never going to be a team who goes out of the way to make the big hit, right? It's why you don't normally see Canes on like YouTube videos of like NHL's hardest hits, because no, they don't go out of the way to like just nail a guy. And that's not what I mean by hitting. What I mean by hitting is if a guy has the puck and he's 3 feet away and within a reasonable time, if he's getting rid of the puck, you still put a body on him, right? Just remind him, I'm here and I'm going to put a body on you, and it's going to pull you out of the play for even 2 or 3 seconds. That's a big deal in hockey. 3 seconds is forever. Watch him go up and down the ice, that's being on the other end of the rink, 2-3 seconds. And some of that starts with just putting a body on a guy, slowing him down, right? Legally, Yeah,
of course.
Other big one we need to see is, gotten a little better, is offensive zone penalties. Don't feel like they've been as bad the last little bit. But when you're in the offensive zone and you're taking hooking penalties and stuff, I mean, that's just brutal. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. So yeah. The good news is, because we're going to be running long here, but things are trending in the right direction. I feel terrible for Raanta. I want to know how that shakes out. A new goaltender isn't going to come in and magically fix all the issues like Kainstat said, because the issue isn't just goaltending, right? But one of the things I always come back to is sometimes bringing a guy in, especially if it's a guy who's from a bubble team or from out of the playoffs into a team that legit has a chance to maybe make a run, is they're going to come in with a good attitude, right? They're coming in positive. Hey, why the long face? Like, we got this. I'm here. Like, let's get in goal. Let's work it. Let's do it. And sometimes that's what it takes, right? You bring somebody else in the room who's ready to go. And that's where the loss of Raanta is going to hurt the most, depending on how things shake out. Because, you both kind of said, he really is Father Finn to those guys. That loss is going to, I worry that him not being around is going to permeate the room, and they're going to get into a funk because of it. And a lot of that we'll find out in 6.5 hours.
Yeah.
Right. You have a huge game against the Caps, a 4-point game. The Caps have 3 games in hand. If there's a must win for the season thus far, this is it.
100%, Brad. Brad, we don't normally do this to our guests, but Kane Stats, he's a smart guy. So I'm going to ask him a question that might put him on the spot.
Is it calculus?
No, I don't even know what calculus is. I barely made it out of grade 3 math. So we just went through a lot of doom and gloom in the last three, we just went through, and we've got 5 out of 6 points on a winning trend, getting points. So there is good news. Is there a stat, your stats guy, Kane Stats, is there a stat that we have that points that we're headed in the right direction? I'm curious to know, because stats can say so many things, sometimes misleading, like, the plus minus can be a misleading thing, but someone who crunches numbers like you, there's got to be something that says, there's a light at the end of this tunnel.
I look at two. First one, I would look at like the last month of our penalty kill, because when we're at our best, we have a great penalty kill. And I know we allowed one the last game, and it's going to happen. It's just nature of things. But our penalty kill has been so great the last month, where whenever we're on the penalty kill, it seems like, okay, these guys are going to get it done. And even, I know we did allow a goal. Burns was out of position the other night, but like how hard those guys were working to get pucks out. They were on a mission, it seemed, to kill every single penalty. And I think that's one thing that I look at with a little bit of excitement, because it feels like our penalty kill is finally getting it back together and our mojo is back. The other one I would say is the depth scoring. The last couple of years, we've been just struggling finding those depth scoring in the playoffs, and we're getting contributions from everybody. Even if it's not like every other game, you're getting players like Kotkaniemi, you're getting players like Tavo getting it back together, Michael Bunting. We're still getting our depth scoring from our defensemen, which is really good. When you have players like Aho, and even actually one more, Jarvis on the power play has been fantastic this year. So you're getting the scoring from all kinds of different people. You don't have to rely on your Svechnikovs to go out there and score 30 goals every single night, or Aho to score every night. Aho scored one goal the other night, and he was still really good offensively, and we scored 5 goals. We got scoring from everybody, and that's what we need. I think that's something that's still a bright spot, even though we still might not be like top 10 in goals for per game. We're getting contributions from everybody, and I think that's more important than getting contributions from just the top line.
That's something to feel really, really good about. And go ahead.
Can I give you one, Ray?
Yeah, 100%.
This is anecdotal. I don't necessarily have the stats to back this up. I always look at team goal differential when I look at who's playing well, who's going to be a playoff team, and it generally holds pretty well. If you look at the Western Conference right now, the top 10 teams in the West have positive goal differentials. Everybody else has negative. Like, it kind of makes sense, right? If you score more goals than you give up, you probably win more games. The Hurricanes, even though they are technically in a playoff spot now, they're not, because the Devils and Washington have games in hand. However, the Hurricanes are back on the plus side in goal differential. Tampa Bay, the Capitals, the Canadiens, the Sabres are all negative. You know, Pittsburgh actually is a plus two. You're a plus one. That's basically nothing, right? So for me, saying, okay, positive goal differential, if you keep it going there, you're probably going to win more than you're going to lose. The teams with negatives, unless they have a change, are probably going to lose more than they win. And by the end of the season, hopefully that means you're a playoff team, right?
There you go. So look, this has been, again, an emotional podcast. We do have lots to feel good about, Let's make a point of saying this. Look, as angry, as upset, as frustrated, as flummoxed, as flabbergasted as we can be at times, understand, Canes are still a great team. They have all of the pieces in the puzzle together. We're just having trouble putting it together to make the big picture. And the big picture is, you know, Jordan Staal having Stanley over his head. That's the big picture. And the puzzle pieces are there. We just got to try to put them together. It looks like they're starting to do that. You know, the Kochetkov save against Brady Tkachuk on Tuesday was outstanding. The fact that he was going to throw down with Tkachuk as well was even better. I love that. He made Brad look like a fool. Not you, Brad. The other Tkachuk. and then the win against the Red Wings, another good one, 2-1, where we had to accept a gift to score a goal. Jordan Staal scores on a gift. That was kind of strange, but we loved it. And then look, a 6-5 loss when they returned home against the Preds. I'll tell you what, that was a friggin' entertaining game. And yeah, we would have liked the full points on that. That was an entertaining game. And they were on fire, and the boys were scoring. Sadly, it didn't end up the way we wanted, but 5 out of 6 points on that week was great. I apologize. I will not go to the Bahamas again while I was away. They lost every frigging game. So now I'm no longer allowed to go to Bahamas. I apologize to all
only
the
during the season
jerks. Just during the, yeah, maybe outside the season, that'll be great. Coming up, we've already talked about the 4-point game, and we've got 4 games this week. Brad, I'm going to put you on the spot again. Which games are we looking at here? We've got, I think we've got the Devils in there somewhere, don't we?
No. So real quick, so even with the four game loss through Western Canada, if you look at those 2 weeks combined, and I'm going to throw in the Buffalo game, 3-5. So it's not good, but 3-5 sounds better than 0-4 for the week, right?
Sure does.
Yeah. So we have alternating games here for a while with the Christmas break. Capitals, Tuesday, you got the Vegas Golden Knights coming to town, who have been very good. That's going to be a tough one. Yep. Then you got the Pens, like, right, another 4-point game. The Pens are further down in the Metro than you, or than the East than you are, but take the points where you can get them. Then on Saturday, you have the Islanders coming in. The Islanders have been playing all right. Once again, like, those are points, you know, if you can go three out of four in these, drop the Vegas game. You know, save your strength if you need to do something. Christmas break, 24th, 5th, and 6th. The Preds were going to their barn, so you have a chance at a little revenge. The next night, you got the team that shall not be named. And then on the 30th, the Battle of Ray's House, the Toronto Maple Leafs versus the Carolina Hurricanes in Toronto.
A great way to end the calendar year. Civil War in my house.
If they win, it's worth it.
It is. Otherwise, what's on the line usual? If we end up losing that one, I'll be wearing blue instead of black.
And if we win, I mean, I got a couch if you can get down here.
There you go. Sounds good. Kane Stats. Thank you. First of all, I want to let you promote yourself here everyone knows about you, but more people should know about you than already do, because what you've offered, you offer everyone a little bit of perspective. You throw those numbers out, Kane Stats. Everyone digs you. How do we find you? How do we follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kane Stats, and that's it.
That's it. You put a great perspective out there for us, and we've come to love it. We really appreciated your attendance here and talking me off the ledge earlier. I really apologize. I can be a little unnerving at times, someone snapping like that. I saw Brad smiling with that look in his eyes, like, Raymond's really lost it.
Fanatic. I mean,
yeah, well, true enough, right? True enough.
I always come back to that. Like, you know, I've said it a million times, particularly in regard to not only this franchise, but my beloved Wolfpack. And that is that, you know, anything other than apathy is okay by me, you know, you because anger and frustration indicate there's still love there, right? You're still committed. There's still passion. When that turns to apathy, that's when we worry. So if you're on Twitter and you need to rant and rave about Ronta being gone, go for it. If you are happy he's gone, I don't know that that's necessarily a great take, but do you. I'm not going to tell you, you know, what to be. If you were just like, I'm done with this team, like that's when the worry sets in. So
100%.
You know, everybody deals with it their own way.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope we haven't scared you off, because we'll want you to come back in the future. You're a great guest.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And so, Brad, we've talked about it a lot. We've been emotional. Maybe another cast down the line will make our Ted Lasso Carolina Hurricane player comparison bit.
Oh yeah, I'm all in.
That's that would be a fun little bit to do. We've done a lot of things today, but there is something that is missing, something that we want to say very loud and very proud as we put the boots to the Caps in a few hours.
Go Canes.
Go Canes.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Ray and I greatly appreciate your support in helping us produce an informative and fun podcast. As always, we'd like to say that we believe hockey is for everyone. Whether you're a Caniac or a bunch of jerks, doesn't matter, as we're just a couple of jerks anyway. We would love to hear your questions, comments, and suggestions. We will do our best to answer anything hockey-related. You can reach us via email at stormcellar97@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are @stormcellar97, and on Facebook at facebook.com/stormcellar97.